Bhagavad Gita ki jai. So, as far as I understand, we're just beginning a series of discussions on the four most essential verses of Bhagavad Gita. At least that's my impression. They're called Chatur Shloki, four essential verses of the entire Bhagavad Gita. If you can understand these four verses of Bhagavad Gita, you've understood Bhagavad Gita. And if you can understand Bhagavad Gita, you have a one-way ticket to Goloka. One-way ticket. No coming back. Purnar Janma Na. So, it's a very important chapter, a very important section of the entire Gita. So do a little preliminary. The first of those verses, the one we're going to be focusing on this evening, is chapter 10, text number 8. And chapter 10 is called Vibhuti Yoga. Vibhuti Yoga. And the verse just before chapter 10, verse 8, it speaks of Vibhuti Yoga. And that's where the title comes from. So I'm going to discuss a little bit verse number 7 as well as verse number 8. And to understand both of those verses, let's speak first a little bit. What is Vibhuti? Vibhuti is a word. In English, it's opulences, but it's a very special word. And one nice way to understand its meaning comes from Srimad Bhagavatam. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there, in the beginning, the first chapter of Canto 1 Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a number of questions, six questions asked by the sages, Abhinaimisharanya, to Suta Goswami. And one of those questions is, they want to know, what are the forms of the Lord that have appeared in this world? That word is avatar. Quite a different version than the movie. Avatar means one who descends. So one who descends is in the spiritual realm. There are forms of the Lord. And he who creates this realm descends in the realm that he creates in various forms. And to respond to that question, that one of the six questions, there's a whole chapter, chapter 3 of Canto 1, where various forms of the Lord are described. They're not all of them, and they're not elaborately described. That comes later in the Bhagavatam. But just, there's a list of avatars. First, it speaks of the Purusha avatars. The Purusha avatars, like is described in Purusha Sukta prayers of the Rig Veda, the Purusha avatars are Vishnu forms specifically. They're expansions of the Supreme Lord for the purpose of material creation. Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Shiradakshay Vishnu. The Vishnu forms of the Lord, whose purpose is to manifest the cosmic creation. And then through those Vishnu forms, the other forms that exist beyond and before the material creation, they make their appearance in the material creation through the agency of the Purusha avatars. So then this other list of commonly known are the Lila avatars, or the pastime incarnations of the Lord. And the guna avatars, the three modes of nature and the presiding deities of those three modes of nature. The shaktyavesha avatars, empowered forms of the Lord that appear in this world. Manvantar avatars. These forms of the avatars are described, listed with their names and very brief, succinct description. Something like 33 of them. And towards the end, listed amongst the list are Rama and Nrisimha and Varaha and Krishna and Balaram. They're listed as avatars of Vishnu. Now listen carefully, because this is important for the 10.8 Bhagavad Gita that we're going to be discussing. After listing them, among one of which is Krishna, there's a verse, very important verse, in fact a principal utterance of all the verses, a Mahavakya statement of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, says that of all these forms of the Lord that have been described, one of them is the source of all of them. And that one of them that's the source of all of them is Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Eti Chamsa Kalapasa. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. It's a very important verse. Our acharyas have described it again and again and again, and you'll, those of you that like to read commentary can read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where there's pages where that verse is analyzed by, you know, the Purvapaksha method. Someone says this, a counter-arguer says something else, to that they say, and it goes back and forth. Considers other points of view with the same conclusion. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. You remember that phrase, we're going to come back to it with 10.8 Bhagavad Gita. Because the whole of the Vedas are summarized in Vedanta Sutra, which begins by saying the purpose of the Vedas is to understand what is that from which everything else comes. Janma dyasya yataha is one of the first aphorisms of Vedanta Sutra, which means, what is it? Saha is a pronoun referring to the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth, Saha, that, whatever that is, the Absolute Truth is the source of everything else. Please remember these words, because this is what 10.8 Bhagavad Gita is saying. That which is the source of everything else is the Absolute Truth. No, let's say it the other way around. Everything that exists comes from that source. Whatever that is, that's the Absolute Truth. And that means there is no truth superior. Matak parataran nanyat kinchid asti dananjaya. In another verse, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, there's no truth superior to me. Truth in the Vedic sense of source of emanation. Krishna doesn't come from something. Everything comes from Krishna. That's the whatever everything comes from something, and that something from which everything comes doesn't have a source. Whatever that is, that's the Absolute Truth. Because other things may also be truths. So many things come from something. So many forms of the Lord come from Vishnu. Just like, with the exception of our pujaris, every one of us came through that door. Before we came through that door, we existed. And then we came through that door, and now we're here. And then we're going to go back out and do something else. Similarly, the forms of the Lord existed before the Purusha avatars. They're eternally situated in the spiritual realm. Eternally situated in the spiritual realm. And they appear as avatars of Vishnu. Like, we walk through the doorway and now we're in the temple room. So before those avatars of the Lord, which appeared as avatars of Vishnu, they existed in the spiritual world, in Vaikuntha realm, in the Parvayom. And they have their own Vaikuntha planet. But then they appeared in this world and performed pastimes or Leela avatars, or did other activities. Demonstrated the Lord's Palana Shakti as Prithu Maharaj, or his Gyan Shakti as the Four Kumaras, or his Bhakti Shakti as Narada Muni, etc. They perform different functions, but they have their existence in the spiritual realm. So who is the source of all of them? Vedas is searching for that. Saha Janmadiyasya Yataha. So whatever that is, that's the absolute truth, and the Bhagavatam is saying Krishna is the source of all of them. Very important. You will connect that statement to the Bhagavad Gita in a moment. And then Krishna goes on describing other manifestations of the Supreme Lord within this world, because that was the question by the sages. So Sutta says one of those manifestations is vibhutis. Now, vibhutis are very special. Like, that means special meaning, there's a particular meaning to vibhuti. Vibhuti is distinct from bhaga. Bhaga. Krishna is Bhagavan. When Krishna speaks, it's Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Bhagas, Parashara Muni says in Vishnu Purana, the personality of Godhead, he who is the source of everything, has six opulences. Same word, opulences. But these are called bhagas, and the others are called vibhutis. The opulences of Bhagavan are all knowledge, all strength, all beauty, all fame, all renunciation. He is complete. What does that mean? Somebody may have some wealth, somewhere else there's somebody that has more wealth, somebody has some more wealth, somebody, there's somebody has some more wealth. But there's one entity, one person, that has all wealth. And that's Bhagavan. There's only one. Someone has some strength, someone has some beauty, someone has some intelligence, someone has some renunciation, someone has something that in this world people are attracted to. And there's one that has everything, all beauty, all strength, all knowledge, all renunciation. That's by definition, by Parashara Muni's definition, that's Bhagavan. Bhagavan also has vibhutis, described in Canto 1, Chapter 3. And vibhutis are like little sparks from a fire. And they're even less than little sparks from a fire. They're reflections of little sparks from a fire. They're, because this world, in Chapter 15 of Bhagavad Gita, this world, this realm that we're in now, is a reflection of the spiritual realm. So things that are reflections, that supposing you have a Christmas tree, then you have a lake and you have reflection of the Christmas tree in the lake, and there's lights on the Christmas tree, and then you see in the lake there's lights on the Christmas tree. So the amount of light that's in the reflection of the Christmas tree in the lake is very tiny. But it indicates there's lights on the tree, of which it is a reflection. That's what vibhutis are. They're opulences that are of the spiritual world reflected in a tiny little way in this world. And that's what Chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita is. It's vibhuti yoga. In Chapter 10, Krishna is going to describe, following these Chaturshloki verses, he's going to describe, because Arjuna asks him, what are ways that I can always think of you? So Krishna says, here's some ways you can always think of me. Think of my vibhutis and you can think of me. The opulences that you find reflected in this world, of mountains I am the Himalayas, of the strength I am the strong, of the prowess of all powerful men, I'm the light of the sun and the moon and so forth. Of everything that's like super, Krishna is the best of that super, and that's just a little dim reflection of what his opulences are in the spiritual world, which gives some indication of him. So you can think of him in this world by his vibhutis. So that's in this forms of the Lord as they appear in this world chapter in Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1. Now we're going to jump ahead and go to 10th chapter Bhagavad Gita, which very miraculously follows chapter 9 Bhagavad Gita. And in chapter 9 Bhagavad Gita, the title is The Most Confidential Knowledge. And the most confidential knowledge, if I had more time, would go into detail. But it's the intimate exchange of love between Krishna and his devotee. The exchange of love between lover and beloved on the spiritual plane that's not tainted by anything material. That's the most confidential knowledge. And the medium of that exchange is devotional service or bhakti. At the end of the bhakti chapter, at the end of the chapter 9, there's this very famous verse. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. And it's one verse that's twice in Bhagavad Gita. Guess what? It's important. It's because it's there twice. And so Krishna is saying, think always of me. So chapter 10 is, how do I always think of you? Seamless fit. But before Krishna presents the ways in which Arjuna or we can always think of him, he wants Arjuna to understand him properly. So that's how chapter 10 begins. Chapter 10 begins, I'm going to disclose something to you more confidential than the most confidential. That's pretty good. Because then he says, the very next thing he says is, nobody knows me. He starts listing different people that don't know him. All the great rishis and the demigods and the most learned persons in existence don't know me. And here's why. You can't, very, very simple, you can't know what existed before you existed. Hey, that's a no-brainer, right? You can't know what existed before you existed. You can speculate, perhaps, maybe. By inference, you can reason and logically deduce, maybe it was this. Or maybe you're not so honest, you don't say maybe it was this, you say it was this. But if you're honest, you don't know. And Krishna says, nobody knows. Then he gives the exception of how you can know. He says, if that which existed before you existed discloses, then you can know. Otherwise you can't know. And then he speaks this verse, so we're almost there, chapter 10, text number 7. Well, text number 6. He starts describing how he's the source of everything. Text 6, he says, the 7 great sages and before them the 4 great sages and the Manus come from me, born from my mind, and all living beings populating the various planets descend from them. So what existed before you existed? All these personalities. They're your forefathers, starting with Manu. And the Prajapatis, the progenitors of mankind that come, some of them come directly from Lord Brahma, and some of them come from the Manus. And then they populate the place, including different species of life, and they existed before you existed. And who existed before they existed? Krishna said, I did. I'm the source of them. And then all generations come from them. So then, this is text 7, in which he mentions Vibhuti Yoga. Etam Vibhutim Yogam Cha Mama Yo Veti Tatvataha. Veti Tatvataha, knows in truth. Yo Mam Veti Tatvataha. One who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mind, engages in unalloyed devotional service, of this there is no doubt. So vikalpena yogena yujate natra sanshayaha. So two terms. One is vibhuti yoga. Etam vibhutim yogam cha. Yoga means linking. And they link with, or they accept, this opulence of mind. What of that opulence? So the opulences are the things over here that are like the lights of the Christmas tree, reflecting the Christmas tree with lights. So he's the source of those vibhutis that have their spiritual counterpart in the spiritual world, and Krishna is the source of them. And to link with Krishna through them is vibhuti yoga. That's what the title of this chapter is, or opulences of the Absolute. And then the other phrase is, so avikalpaina, that's saha, that's again the pronoun, that person who, avikalpaina yogena. So avikalpaina yogena is undivided devotional service. Undivided devotional service, not a mix. Vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha kuru nandana, from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 41. Krishna is describing buddhi yoga, avyavichari bhakti, undivided devotion, where intelligence is not splayed out, not bahushaka, but very singular, very, very focused. Avyavichari bhakti, undivided devotions. Such persons who know that Krishna has this opulence, he's the source of all opulences. That's one of his opulences. He's the source of opulences in this world. He's the source of opulences in the spiritual world. He's the source of all opulences. That's vibhuti yoga. And avyavikalpena, they're undivided in their devotion. Such a person is fixed. And that's the prelude to the Chaturshloki, first of the Chaturshloki verses. So those that know the verse, we can recite it together a couple of times. It's a nice verse to remember. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. One more time. So you hear it a few times and maybe you'll wake up in the morning tomorrow before you chant your japa and the verse will just appear in your mind. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Sounds very nice. One more time. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. So the first two lines is a checkmate. Krishna gets you going this way and he gets you going that way. He says, Aham sarvasya prabhava, I am the source of everything. Then the next line is, everything comes from me. In case you didn't get it the first time. Aham sarvasya prabhava. So our acharyas describe this, sarvasya means everything. So matter and spirit. Earlier in chapter 7, Krishna has spoken about matter and spirit. He speaks of the dina prakritir ashtada, the eight separated energies. And then he speaks, that's matter. And then he speaks of spirit. Apare amitas yam tvam yam prakritim vidime param. The spiritual energy. Para prakriti. Apara prakriti and para prakriti. And then Krishna says, I'm source of both. There's matter and spirit and me. The controller of both. I'm the source of them and I control them. That's it. There's no truth. Then in the same chapter, there's no truth superior to me. There's not something that is the source of me. I'm the source of everything, matter and spirit. And there's no truth superior to me. So now he's saying, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. I'm the source of everything. So Prabhava is another very nice word. Just like in Vedic mantras, there's this term bhavati. You know, something, 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 bhavati. Bhavati means like voila, like so be it. And so it was, like the Bible. God said, let there be light and bhavati. And so it was. And he said it was good. And it was good. So, bhavati, he brings something into being. So, bhavati, that which comes into being, prabhava, it becomes manifest from aham. Aham is first person singular. Krishna speaking. It's not something impersonal, it's personal. Aham. Aham sarvasya prabhava. I am the source of everything, and then everything comes from me. Matak sarvam pravartate. So, the next line is itimatva. Itimatva means thus knowing. As Krishna said in the previous verse, when one understands in truth, tatvataha, this opulence of mine, that he's the source of all opulences, and he's the reflected ones, and he's the before the reflected ones. He's the opulences, he is the opulent. He's the all opulent source of everything. Iti matva, thus knowing, what do you do? It's only one thing. For honest people, you engage in service to that, whatever that is, to that person, whoever that person is. In the presence of a great person, it's unnatural to do anything other than honor and serve that great person. And let's just use a worldly example. Supposing we received notice, somebody got a text message saying the governor of Missouri is going to come visit the Hare Krishna temple. My God, the governor is going to come to the Hare Krishna temple. What would we do? We'd make some nice arrangement and offer him some honor and some something. Because he's the governor of the state. Or, for a number of years, another example, I took part in, we took part in the Indian Independence Day Parade in New York. And it's a nice parade. It comes down Madison Avenue and there's a festival, a little gathering in Madison Park. But over the years, the organizers, the Federation of Indian Association, FIA, they figured out the way to get the best attendance is to have Bollywood stars on the stage at the end. Because everyone likes to worship the Bollywood stars. They'll come more than if a sadhu comes, if a Bollywood star comes. And I watched what happens. Everyone goes streaming to the stage, and when the Bollywood star goes off the stage, it's over. Party's over. Everyone disperses. Because that, you know, it's, they want to offer honor and praise and to such a personality. Krishna has something to say about that in Bhagavad Gita, but I'll skip it. Worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is for those who are situated in tattva vijnanam, knowledge of the Absolute Truth. And iti matva bhajante mam, and bhaj is an important word also. Bhaj is the root word of bhakti, and bhaj means practical activity, which means the senses detect a sense object and the senses engage in practical activity in relation to the sense object, offering some service to the source of that sense object. That's the meaning. So bhakti is not just a feeling, it's a feeling, but it's not just some sentiment. Bhakti is practical activity. There's the flower, and we offer the flower to Krishna, for example. We don't go away from the flower. We don't enjoy the flower independently. We offer the flower to Krishna with love and devotion because it's his, one of his opulences. And the fragrance of the incense and the lamp, he's the source of all fire. What does he need fire? But it's an offering of devotion. That's bhakti. Practical activity of making offerings to the Supreme. Iti madva bhajante mam. There we are again. First person singular. They worship me. They engage in my devotional service. Buddha. Buddha indicates buddhi. Buddhi is intelligent, and buddha are those who have intelligence. And there's different kinds of intelligence, like, for starters, material and spiritual intelligence. So, buddhi is spiritual intelligence. Going back to this verse that I mentioned from chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita, tadami buddhiyogam tam. Buddhi, vyavasayatmika buddhi. Buddhi is a spiritual intelligence, which means specifically, comes later in, I guess you're going to be continuing this series of the Chatrasloki verses, so you'll hear that word buddhi again. Buddhi is knowledge by which you can go to Krishna. So it's like a treasure map. You know, kids in junior high school have to read all these pirate stories. I notice as I visit homes, and you guys do homeschooling, so you don't have to read them, but the other kids, they have to read them. Did you have to read them? Pirate stories? English literature? You didn't? Okay. I've seen the libraries of kids. They've got stacks of them. Anyway, the treasure map. How to get the booty, the vibhuti. Get the opulence. Get that, you know, the treasure. So there's a little treasure map. And the treasure map is, you know, you go to this place and you turn right and you get to that place and turn left and you go in, there's a little trap door, and Alice in Wonderland, you go into Wonderland, and then you find the treasure. The intelligence, buddhi, is how to get to Krishna. Here we are in this material atmosphere, and it's really tough to get to the spiritual atmosphere and the material atmosphere. Here's why. Because you can't do something or do nothing to get there. If you do something in the material atmosphere, you're bound by karma. That's chapter 3, Bhagavad Gita. Do something in the material atmosphere, that's karma. And for that, there's reaction, the other kind of karma, bondage. So one might think, okay, well, I'll just do nothing. But Krishna says, you can't do nothing because your spirit soul, you're active. Souls are active. You're going to do something. So it's, what, catch 22, damned if you do and damned if you don't. Do something, do nothing. You're in bondage. So what's a nice person supposed to do? You can't do something, you can't do nothing. Then he gives the solution. The eject button. You perform sacrifice, yajna, to acts to satisfy Vishnu. You bring your senses to sense objects. Here's the kartals. And you sing nice songs for Krishna with musical accompaniment. And bhakti, bhajan. Iti matva bhajante ma. Buddha bhava samanvita. Buddha is the intelligence that says here's how you go from conditioned state to the perfected spiritual state. Here's the intelligence by which you can get there. Buddha. And bhava, we know what that is. That's ecstasy. It's the preliminary stage to prema, love, in devotion to the personality of Godhead. Buddha bhava samanvita. So Krishna sees, oh, he's understood. Like we were discussing earlier today. King Prajñāvari didn't get it. And he didn't get it and finally got it. So when Krishna sees, oh, he got it. He received the intelligence how to come to me. Fantastic. Let me give him all the intelligence he needs. Let me give him ecstasy of love out of reciprocation for his sincere desire to come to me. So, or as Prabhupada has put it very succinctly, this process of Krishna consciousness is joyfully performed. It's joyfully performed. It's not an artificial imposition on the mind. The chanting of Hare Krishna and the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is not something that's out there and you have to import it. It's actually something that's already with you. It's natural. Just like walking is natural propensity within a child, although they don't know how to walk right away. By practice, a couple of steps and they collapse, and the mother takes this hand or that hand or both of them and another couple little steps and they collapse. But the walking propensity is innate, and by practice it comes out. They have to learn, you know, the motor skills, but it comes out because it's already there. It's innate. Similarly, bhakti is something that's innate. Prema is already within the heart of every living being. Nitya siddha Krishna prema sadhya kabunoi. It's something already there. It's intrinsic to the soul. Shravanadi, beginning with hearing. Shuddha chitte, one's consciousness becomes purified by that hearing and chanting and remembering, by the processes of bhakti. The bhakti that's in within comes out. It's already there. It's natural. It's not. So that's this spiritual intelligence. Krishna is also within our heart. So it's not learning, you know, a new software program, or somebody got me a new telephone. I'm trying to figure out how to use this new telephone. Got it. I didn't even know how to answer the phone when I first got it. There's this green thing going like, so I said, you can't just do that, you got to go like that. Oh, okay. Now I can answer the phone. It's not something out there that you bring inside, it's something inside that you awaken. That's the point. Natural for the soul. It's innate, as walking propensity is innate. And so the vidhis, or the regulations of bhakti, awaken that natural propensity. And hearing about Krishna, specifically, hearing about Krishna's position. Somebody asked in our discussion today how to increase my appreciation and affection for Krishna. So here we are again. Just hear about Krishna, because he's all attractive. So you become attracted to the all-attractive by hearing his attractive qualities. And here's one of them. He's the source of everything. Really? Everything? Everything. The source of everything. You're the source of everything. Prabhupada once said, there's two things, Krishna and Krishnas, and there's not a third thing. And you can understand that, and you engage in his service, because we're in the category of Krishnas. We belong to Krishna. So that's a nice button. I belong to Krishna. And if you belong to Krishna, what do? You serve Krishna. I belong to Krishna. That's a nice one. I am Krishna's property. And he can do with me what he likes, but I know what I like. I like to do what he likes. That's called love. So I get some indication what he likes, and then zoom, zoom, zoom. Just like Hanuman. As soon as he hears, there he is, waiting for Ram to say, I would like, and fill in the blank. And there goes Ram. There goes Hanuman. Getting what Ram wants. Because that's his life, is what Ram wants. Think of that. Look inside. There's his heart. It's Ram. He just loves doing service for Ram. And that's what bhakti is, loving to do service in different rasas or different bhavas. So according to one's constitutional bhava, it may be friendship, like Arjuna. Or it may be servitorship, like Hanuman to Ram. Or it may be parental affection, like Vasudeva and Devaki. Or maybe conjugal love, like the wives of Krishna and Dwarka. Or the gopis of Krishna and Vrindavan. Or whatever the constitutional rasa or variety, variegatedness is there in the spiritual world. According to that, from the soul level emotion of love, you serve him. Iti madva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. With mind completely absorbed due to that affection for him. And that's the first of the Chaturshloki verses. And it just gets better. Wait till the next verses. Come next week. Stay tuned for coming attractions. Hare Krishna. Any discussion or questions? Okay. Yes? He says, it's at the top. It's a particular inspiration for undivided devotional service. Undivided devotion, unmixed devotional service. Abhyabhichari bhakti. The top of the yoga ladder. No other shelter, no other motivation, no other interest. Fixed intelligence, mind absorbed in him, is the fulfillment of what he says in chapter 9. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskar. Yes?
Yes, how do we know what our constitutional relationship with Krishna is?
Stay tuned to the Krishna channel, it will become revealed to you. Here's a bag of seeds. You look at the bag of seeds and say, I wonder what that looks like when it's a fully grown plant. That's not how you find out, by pulling on your chin and guessing. You put in the seed, pour some water, keep the weeds away, and let it grow. And then you'll find out what it looks like in a mature stage. Okay. Yes.
No, I found it interesting. Sometimes I talk to other people of other Vedic schools of thought. There's actually people who erroneously think that Krishna came from Brahman, believe that Brahman was the first, and then Krishna came from that.
Yeah, I don't.
How to come to that conclusion?
I don't know either. Because at the end of chapter 14, he says just the opposite. Brahmano hi pratishta aham. I am the pratishta, or the basis and foundation of Brahman. So maybe they're looking at their Bhagavad Gita upside down. can't say. Anybody else? Okay, thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada.